Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and with us now, New York City Council Speaker Melissa Mark-Viverito, her first time back on the show. Since being elected Speaker, she has represented East Harlem in Council since 2005 and co-founded the Progressive Caucus as a pushback to the Bloomberg-Quinn era. And there's a lot for us to talk about, with the possible landmark labor agreement reportedly about to emerge with the teachers union, a big affordable housing plan on the near horizon, and the speaker taking some very unusual steps for any elected leader to diminish her own power. Madam Speaker, belated congratulations on your post, and welcome back to WNYC.
Always a pleasure, Brian. Thank you so much.
First, any word on this possible UFT contract settlement we hear the mayor is close to today? Are you involved in any way?
Well, I will get briefed later on, but I think we've been hearing, obviously, a lot of the broad strokes of what the contract may call for. Let me just say, I mean, it's way overdue, as we all know. It's been since 2009 that the UFT and has been looking to negotiate a contract for their members, all of our municipal labor contracts overdue. So this is really good news, and obviously the devil is in the details, right, and looking at the cost and looking at the length of time, and with regards to retro pay. So there's a lot of information, but, you know, sounds from what you're hearing that there's some issues of reform. When you talk about education reform, work rules reform, you're talking about being fiscally responsible in terms of how this is going to be carried out, and also respecting, right, our teachers and respecting the work that they do. And so I think this is good news that our mayor has taken seriously negotiating these contracts. It's a responsible thing to do. I think it was irresponsible for the prior administration to walk away from this. And so I do give a lot of kudos to the mayor for stepping up to the plate.
On the cost, you recently announced the city council budget plan for the next fiscal year. Did you allocate enough money for the back pay for teachers that's likely to come out of this, or will you probably have to go back and make some cuts to other things that you proposed?
Be clear, you know, the proposal that we put out in response to the preliminary budget was, I think, an incredibly a document I'm incredibly proud of. It was done through extreme collaboration with my colleagues, and we really took the time to analyze the mayor's budget. All of the proposals that we lay out in that 55-page document, all of the ideas, ends up costing $250 million, which is 0.4% of the overall budget. And even taking that into account, based on our revenue projections, which differs from OMB, there still would be $700 million extra, right, that would be available. So it is a responsibly, fiscally responsibly from our perspective, what we're offering and what we're proposing, and it does take into account. Obviously, that was part of the narrative that we put in our response. We are clear that the issue of outstanding labor contracts is incredibly important and not something that we overlooked. That's serious. There were some allocations towards that the preliminary budget took into account. Mm-hmm. And then when you take into account the revenue forecast that we're projecting, you still would have even more money above that.
So you're saying the money is allocated for what you expect to come out of these various contracts with some retro pay and with very little additional spending of taxpayer funds.
That's what I am saying. And hopefully, obviously, we have to look at the details of what this negotiation. We know that it's going to probably set the tone for other labor contracts. So once we get the details later on today, we can really do a more accurate projection.
And before we move on to some other things, let me just ask you to take a step back from the immediate moment and look at the bigger picture. We are not Detroit. But how concerned are you about New York City's long-term fiscal health with deferred and unfunded pension and health obligations that have been made by many past administrations gathering over time to public sector workers?
Well, I mean, that is clearly a concern. But from what we are hearing, right, and the mayor was clear about this, stepping up to the plate, and ultimately finalizing these labor contracts is on the administration's side. It's been clear that everybody has to come to the table and everyone has to figure out how to contribute and how to give back. And it seems that was taken into account in these negotiations. And again, as I said, it will set the tone for the others. So I think there's some measures being taken to address that so that we can really try to deal with those outstanding concerns moving forward.
All right. Intriguing prospect to see what the UFT is giving back as well as getting when this deal is announced, perhaps later today. My guest is the New York City Council Speaker, Melissa Mark-Viverito. And you are making news this week in the most unusual of ways for a politician, proposing to voluntarily give up some of your power on how to allocate discretionary funds and on how much the speaker alone controls what bills come to a vote. Can you tell us first about the discretionary funds and what would be different from the past?
So we and let me just be clear, because I think I always want to challenge people that want to start off by saying that this is, you know, giving away power, right? I view power and I view leadership very differently, right? I'm very collaborative in the way that I work in general. That's my style. That's who I am. And I believe that it empowers individuals and has people invest, right, in the ideas and the institution when you ask them to have their voice and you respect their voice and it be heard. So that's clear. What we're doing in the idea of the discretionary allocations is that we've created what I'm calling kind of a hybrid model, right? There's going to be a baseline amount that every council member is going to get, which is typically above the average of what has been given in the immediate past.
In other words, it used to be that the speaker would distribute different amounts of money to different council members for different districts, and you're saying that now each is going to get dollar amount X and it's going to be the same?
Yes, I would say yes to what you just laid out. And there is a baseline amount that is above that if we proceeding would be above the average. Mm-hmm. But on top of that, we are also factoring in the number of individuals living in poverty in any given district. So those districts that have a greater number of people living in poverty are going to get an additional amount above that baseline amount to factor in need.
So are you saying here that the differences from district to district are going to be less based on politics than in the past and more based on need?
Correct. That's. I mean, I'm not going to elaborate. Yes, I would say yes. And that's, I think it's very important. I think it's historic. I am very proud that we're taking this step. And again, it speaks to also, right? I think it also have to, we get criticized by some, not many, but some people want to criticize and say that we should get rid of member items altogether. And I'm very clear that the ability of council members to reinvest our taxpayer dollars in our communities supports jobs, and it supports vital services of local nonprofits that many a time have been left out of a competitive bidding process.
And
that's a reality for poor communities. Mm-hmm. In particular, and communities of color, it's incredibly important. And I stand proudly by the decision and the position that this council should continue to allocate discretionary allocations to our districts.
That criticism comes from some good government groups, which really like the other part that we just talked about, where you're taking some of the politics out of it and putting need into it. Mayor de Blasio also would prefer to abolish these member items or discretionary funds altogether because they've been abused in the past to curry corruption.
And abused by very few people, Brian, and it should not muddy the waters for everybody else, because at the end of the day, the individuals on the receiving end of these services are communities of color, low-income communities that have needs that many times are not being addressed, right, by other organizations. So that's very important, and I think that is a distinction that maybe some of the groups that criticize don't want to recognize. And that's a reality that we live in the city with the greatest income inequality. And there's institutional, right, inequalities that exist that also affect our locally based, community-based organizations.
Indeed. But the opponents would argue that if these are all really worthy items coming out of every member's district, why shouldn't all of City Council have to examine each item's worthiness and vote on it like any other item?
There is a level of vetting that is happening, very thorough vetting. Every organization that receives funds from this council is vetted by the Mayor's Office of Contracts, is vetted by us as well in terms of our finance department. There's a vetting process. So these are organizations that their vendexes are up to date to ensure that there are no violations, that everything is up to speed. So there is a vetting process. And if one or two individuals, which happens in any profession, they're going to be those that are, you know, outliers and that want to try to do things in an unfair way and illegal way, then that should not taint the rest of us.
the other way that you're giving up some power, and you can argue with that characterization again if you want, is to allow other members of council to move bills to a floor vote without your approval. Do I have that right?
So the idea here is, one, that we're talking about creating an independent drafting unit. That means that any council member that has an idea for a law, that bill will be drafted quickly for introduction. Then obviously the next step is in terms of what gets a hearing, bills get a hearing. And we have hearings not only on bills, we have hearings on issues too. So giving the chairs more discretion and more ability to calendar hearings on bills or on items. And that's something that, again, I'm proud of. And then the issue of talking about whether or not, and again, we're having our hearing. This is a proposed in the bill, that if there is a bill that has 34 sponsors or more, that at least at the committee level, that bill will have a hearing as to whether, a vote as to whether or not to have a hearing on the bill.
So that's 2/3 of the council. And I guess that was an issue during Christine Quinn's tenure on things like, I think, the paid sick leave bill, right, which a lot of people supported in the city council rank and file, but wasn't coming to a vote because they didn't want to cross the speaker and feared retribution.
I mean, we are trying to, again, allow for thorough debate and conversations on issues that really affect and are of concern to New York City residents. And paid sick leave was one that was very much, to not have the ability to have had even a hearing on it for an extended period of time was an injustice, I think. It should have happened. And so we were trying to really, again, allow for really vigorous debate on issues that impact everyday New Yorkers. And so I'm proud, again, of these reforms and the ability for us to engage in serious, thinking about how we can move the city forward in the best interest of everyone.
New York City Council Speaker Melissa Mark Viverito with us here on WNYC. Now, you and Mayor de Blasio agree on most things. One thing you disagree on is whether to hire 1,000 more police officers. You want to, he doesn't. Why is hiring more cops a progressive idea rather than using the money for housing or daycare or anti-poverty program, whatever else might get contrasted with a police buildup?
Well, I think it's a very multi-layered and very complex issue, right? But we based that recommendation and suggestion, again, came out of the hearings that we had and internal conversations. At the hearings, even the commissioner indicated that they dip into overtime excessively in order to allow for more officer hours on the street, which to me, on the face of it, I think to anyone, means that there's a need to have more officers on the street. We have proposed in our recommendations that in terms of a cost-saving measure, that there would be a 10% reduction in overtime. The overtime line in the NYPD budget is about $600 million. We're talking about a 10% reduction and allowing that money to be used towards the 1,000 officers that we're talking about. And so there is a cost to that, we understand. But at the end of the day, when we talk about the additional enforcement that is going to be required on officers to implement Vision Zero or other plans that are being proposed, there's no additional resources being allocated, at least not in the preliminary budget as it was presented. And that's a concern. We can't continue to overstretch and overtax the personnel we have. And so that was the reason why we came across with that recommendation. And we're in the process now of the mayor coming out with his executive budget next week. We're hoping that a lot of the ideas and thoughts that are being put, that we put forth in our preliminary budget response, will be taken into account and see some of that reflected in the expense budget.
Let me get your take on one national issue right now, if I might. You're a proponent of a higher minimum wage and living wage bills, better pay for, people at the lower end of the income scale. Can I get what you think it means for New York that the U.S. Senate yesterday failed to advance a $10.10 national minimum wage?
I think it's just terrible. I mean, I just think it's terrible. I mean, look, we've had, Nobel laureates, economists all talk about the benefit of a higher wage. It's proven, right? It's statistically proven. It's demonstrated that there is an incredible economic benefit to this nation as well. We need to uplift people. We've, in the state here, have been saying, or at least in the city, we believe that the state of New York should give us the authority, right, to be able to raise our minimum wage. And that's something, unfortunately, we haven't seen. I would like to see national action taken. I think it's merited. It's desperately needed. And if, in the meantime, you know, we're also arguing here that the state should allow us to raise our minimum wage in New York City, understanding the challenges that people have. We cannot survive on a minimum wage in this city. The cost of housing and just living expenses are extremely high.
What do you say to the argument that it would mean fewer jobs because those larger businesses or smaller businesses are just going to create, you know, as many jobs as they can fill up to their payroll expense budget, and if it's at a higher wage, it's going to mean fewer jobs?
Well, that's not, again, the numbers don't bear that out, and I think that what we know is that when people receive a higher wage, what they're doing is investing that money and reinvesting that money in their local economy. So people are going to use that money, right, to buy the needs that they have, immediate needs that they have, food, clothing, et cetera. That comes locally right back into the economy, and that helps create more jobs if people are spending money. It's you know, again, there's been incredible analysis of this, and the arguments bear out that it's a more of a benefit to us as a nation. We can't continue to survive as a nation when the highest sector the highest number of jobs that are being created are low sector and low wage jobs. You know, the low wage is a problem, and so we need to lift that up. And so, you know, until the national gets their stuff together, and we can try to figure out if we can do this at a local level, and we're going to continue to make that argument.
So before you go, would you take a step back and give us your best big picture view of how much you think your city council and the de Blasio, Mark Viverito era generally can mean for progressive change, and how much over the next 4 years at the city level, especially without not that much backup from Washington?
I'm extremely excited of the prospect. I think in a short period of time, we've already seen some incredible moves that we've made about how we want to make changes that we can control to help uplift individuals and try to reduce the income gap. You know, the pre-K is really serious when we talk about the achievement gap that we have in the city between young people of color and their white counterparts. When we talk about the paid sick leave, it is beneficial for families that need to work and that at times also need to be able to take time to take care of their families. I mean, there's different aspects of what we've done and what we're moving forward that we can control that will serve as a model, right, to other areas in this country of what can be done to try to address the great inequity that exists. So I have a lot of hope. I want this cannot be done alone. This has to be done in partnership with constituents and with those that live in New York City to support these measures. But we're just starting, and we have 3.5 years to go, and I'm really excited about what we will be able to achieve.
Hey, let me throw one other thing at you from kind of out of left field.
Yes.
For fun. And if you have a thought on this, great. If you don't, that's fine. Later in the program, we will have linguist John McWhorter, who has a new book that argues the world looks the same in every language. Material conditions are different for different groups, but language itself doesn't determine anything about how people see the world. And I'm just curious, as a bilingual person and a proud bilingual person, is it a question you've ever thought about?
Actually, no. That's an interesting one. I definitely would like to tune in and listen and maybe get my wheels churning a little bit and see how I think about that. But I'd be curious to hear hear that.
So we leave that as a tease for the John McWhorter segment coming up in a little while. And New York City Council Speaker Melissa Mark Viverito, thank you for giving us so much time this morning. We appreciate it a lot.
Thank you so much, Brian. Have a great day.